Welcome to Sport Faith Life with Brian Bolt and Chad Carlson, the podcast that meets at the intersection of sport and faith. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and our Sport Faith Life YouTube channel, where you can watch full episodes as we dive deeper into how Christianity and sports connect. Hit that subscribe button and leave us a review on whatever podcast platform you're listening on. On today's Sport Faith Life episode, we're joined by Philip Leopold, a strategist, connector, and longtime advocate for the power of sport to serve humanity. Philip had a very successful career as a sports marketer, then was drawn in by the Vatican-inspired global movement, Sport at the Service of Humanity, where he now serves in a leadership position. Philip has a very interesting story to tell, and we can't wait to hear it. So, let's get started.
We are so excited to have Philip Leopold with us today. Philip, tell us a little bit about sport in your life.
Yeah, sport in my life. Let's start with the professional side. I have spent my entire career in sports marketing, the business side of sport. On the spiritual side, if you will, I've now spent the last 8 or 9, almost 10 years in what I would just summarily describe as the sport for good sector. And then on the personal side, I'm a soccer player. I found the beautiful game when I was very young, living in Europe. And I've spent my life with a healthy addiction to that game. And sort of where they all meet, the spiritual, the professional, and the personal, when I travel, I have found that soccer is the obvious and easiest universal language. If you jump in a cab on the way from the airport to the hotel, any city in the world, and you ask the cab driver who he or she supports, it's a soccer conversation, and it's natural and fun and an instant connection.
Well said. Soccer is the universal language. It's a beautiful game. That's great. We'll be able to explore that a little bit more in just a moment. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about faith in your life.
Yeah, faith in my life. I was, that's a tricky one. I was not raised in a faithful family. And so this journey that I'm on, we'll talk more about Sport for Humanity, but my faith journey began in 2016, less than 10 years ago, when I had the opportunity to visit the Vatican and get involved in this sport for good movement. And so I'm still learning. I would still describe myself as agnostic and, but on a journey for sure.
Well, you've teased a lot of really interesting directions to go here, Phil, and I can't wait to get back to some of those, but let's start with, you already gave us some interesting things, but tell us something about you that will help our listeners get to know you.
Okay. When I was young, I mentioned already, I lived in Europe for a very brief period of time. When I was 9, 10, 11 years old, we were living in Germany, and I would claim I spoke German at that time. Today, I don't. And then, like so many of us that really grew up in America, I spent my entire sort of middle school and high school years learning French. And I would claim that at a point in time I spoke French, and I don't. So use it or lose it, for sure. That I am uniquely incapable of learning a foreign language, or at least retaining it once it's learned.
Well, if that's how it works, I'm going to claim that I speak a lot of different languages and then just retract right. It seems like a good plan.
That's right.
So I have some things about your life and career that I want to get to, but we have an international traveler, a person that's lived outside the United States and in the United States on our show, and the World Cup is heading to North America. Who do you support? And break down the World Cup for us first.
Oof. I support the U.S., but I'm not very optimistic. Right now, we don't look good. And, you know, sort of relative to you know, the perennial powerhouse nations, we've never looked good. You know, we've done well in the tournament every 4 years. I always have low expectations, and we do a little better than I thought we would. So let's hope for the same this time. If I were a betting man on this tournament, I'd probably say Spain. But weird things happen in a soccer match. And, you know, certainly the favorite doesn't necessarily win. I think it's going to be great. There are a lot of countries, more countries than have ever qualified. And so we're going to get a look at some countries that most of us have never seen play. But also the way the bracket is sort of stacked with one powerhouse in each group. And I mean, it's evenly distributed so that in the end, I wouldn't expect any Cinderellas to really get very far. I think by the time we get to the round of 16, certainly the quarterfinals, it's going to be all the countries you would expect.
Yeah, I think you're probably right, and that's a good bet, like you said, that the Blue Bloods will rise to the top and show up when the lights get brighter.
Yeah.
I fully anticipate that, but it'll be really exciting to have it.
I think it's going to be fun.
On our time as well, so that'll really, really help.
One other thing I would add, the controversy with FIFA has hit me hard. But I'm buying tickets anyway. I mean, no matter how much of my money they choose to take, I'm in. It's a World Cup, and I'm going to any game I can get tickets to.
It speaks to the power of sport, doesn't it?
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, no question about it. So you knew about the power of sport, being in sport marketing, and somehow that early career led you into what you're calling sport for good. And that's a great intro. Give us some idea of what brought you to where you are, but also what is sport for good to you?
What brought me here, I spent my career in what I would describe as traditional corporate brand sponsorship marketing. So my client would either be, you know, the beer brand who is sponsoring Major League Baseball, you know, or Major League Baseball, as an example, selling their marketing assets to a beer brand. It all sort of came together. I got a phone call in 2015 from a guy who at the time was the president of the Atlanta Hawks. It's sort of friend of a friend of a friend of a friend. Pope Francis had contacted Thomas Bach, who at that time was the president of the International Olympic Committee. Thomas Bach contacted a bid city consultant, somebody who helped cities around the world bid on hosting the Olympic Games. That person contacted some people in Atlanta that had been involved in the 96 Olympic Games. Those folks contacted a friend of mine that worked for the Atlanta Hawks, who contacted me and said, I got the craziest project you could ever imagine. The Vatican, the IOC, and the United Nations, the leaders of those three entities, would like to host a global conference on sport and faith at the service of humanity. It'll be hosted by the Vatican. And our job as corporate brand sports marketers is to go find sponsorship to cover the cost of convening this conference. I was introduced to Sport for Good at the Vatican in 2016. I went to the conference ostensibly to make sure the sponsors were happy. And by the way, they weren't, because we weren't going to logo up the Vatican, you know?
Sure.
And so, a few corporations were very generous and very committed to seeing what this could be and where it could go. And I feel like at that time I was completely novice to all of this and had a chance to sort of just follow amazingly influential and powerful and thoughtful people for 3 days and learn what sport can do when combined or in collaboration with the faith community to at the service of humanity. That's the name of our foundation, Sport and Faith at the Service of Humanity. So that's sport for good. To me, sport for good is really, sport is a universal language and certainly a universal power. And if you can turn, you know, that sort of unity into something helpful, and we'll talk more about the faith community, obviously, but if you can take sort of the visibility and the power, the clickbait that is sport, and combine it with the mission of faith, you've got something. And for me, that's what I've been devoted to the last 8 or 9 years.
So what was it about this convening that drew you in, that sucked you in, right? You're there, you're helping, but it's still in a sort of a business-based role, right? Fulfilling some of the duties that you do in day-to-day, in your day-to-day life, at least before making this transition. So you're there, this is an event run by the Vatican that includes the IOC and the United Nations. These are huge players globally, right? You can't even think of bigger players than that, really. And you're there working with sponsors, and you're still there today.
Yeah.
What was it that pulled you in?
I was always very aware during my, you know, sponsorship part of my career. I was always very aware of the transactional for-profit nature of what I was working on. You know, when a beer brand sponsors, you know, a sports property, it's to sell more beer. And nothing wrong with that, but I would argue maybe nothing quite so meaningful in that either. So you go to the Vatican and you meet these people that we've referenced, and they're talking about sport and faith collaborating for good, especially on the faith side. You meet faith leaders who are absolutely thoroughly devoted to making the world a better place. That's all they're about. You know, I think if that doesn't resonate with you, then move on. But it resonated with me. The other thing, just sort of the human interest side of this thing, you know, we've all been to business conferences and, you know, you'll have breakout sessions and you're in a small room with 12 people. And I found myself in a small room with 12 people, including like the Prince of Jordan. And, you know, and you're like, I have nothing to add. Trust me, the Prince of Jordan doesn't need to hear what I think. And it just was sort of a fascinating moment to be in the presence of those type of people who, again, are just sort of completely devoted to the betterment of humanity and have the power to make a difference. You know, change happens at the policy level, and these are policymakers. It just, yeah, it stuck. I just thought, well, and I've been I should mention this too. I've been self-employed for about 25 years. And so I always had sort of the liberty to pick and choose which projects I chose to spend my time on and which clients I wanted to really work hard for. And I just, at the end of this conference, raised my hand and just said, I'd like to stay involved. I'd like to see where this goes. I'd like to see if I can contribute.
So, Philip, you've been attempting to contribute now for more than a decade. And you referenced the scope and scale and influence of the people that you're with, which is beyond what most of us are doing day to day, right? You're sitting down with really powerful leaders, trendsetters, really policy setters. And I wonder, over the time that you've had, you know, as a business person, you have things that work great and you have things that fail, right? That's just the way things work. I wonder if you could point to one thing that you thought would work and it really hasn't taken off. It hasn't really moved in a particular direction. And then maybe one thing that you think, I don't know exactly where this is going, but it has stuck. It has resonated in this general endeavor of sport for good, sport for the service of humanity.
Yeah. Wow. On the disappointing side or the frustrating side, I have found that when you're working with these entities that are global in scale, you have very little control, You know, these are mammoth bureaucracies, and I don't mean bureaucracy is probably a word with a negative connotation. I don't mean it that way. I just mean that there are hundreds and sometimes thousands of people involved, and to have any impact at all, to convince them, you know, that my idea or that this concept or that that project is meaningful, it takes a while. And so, you know, I'd say I can't think of a project or a program that we've set out to accomplish and have completely buried, like it failed, let's move on. I'm not that way. If I think it's a good idea, I'll just keep knocking on the door until someone answers. But yeah, I think when you're dealing with these global entities, change happens at the policy level, and it happens very slowly. And then I'll even add another layer using the United Nations as an example. These are incredible people, wonderfully committed, brilliant people in New York at United Nations headquarters. And today, they've got a couple $1 billion budget gap because of, you know, sort of geopolitical situations that none of us have any, you know, control over. And so you can be 2, 3, 9 years into a conversation with the UN, and it's sort of everybody is now distracted because there's no budget, you know, to really activate their most essential work, let alone sport for good. I think it's essential. I'm convinced that sport for good is as important as anything else that anybody is working on. But I, you know, Secretary General of the UN doesn't think that. He's got other things to work on without a budget. So yeah, I think that's it. On the positive side, the way this has gone, I'm going to go back to the Vatican for a second in 2016, coming out of that first global conference, a bunch of us Americans established a series of what we call regional conferences starting with the Big East, at universities, Catholic universities across the U.S., who are sort of already on board with this mission of, you know, Villanova competes in amateur athletics at the highest level in a faith-based environment. And so there's collaboration between the faith and sport communities when you watch Villanova play basketball. And there are sort of opportunities and tension points built into that relationship between faith and sport. So all of that is to say, we've done a series of 5 or 6, we might be working on now our 7th regional conference. And then coming out of, and we invite the faith and sport leaders, you know, that would care about what's going on in Catholic universities across America. I shouldn't say Catholic, in faith-based universities. But what comes out of these conferences is we will typically challenge the attendees to collaborate. And in a lot of cases, we'll have breakout sessions where we can start planting seeds and ideas and then water those seeds over the course of time. And so back to your question, there are a half a dozen examples of what I would call organic projects or programming that have been born at these conferences and that still exist today and that I think are having real impact in local communities or in higher ed, you know, in some way, again, contributing to humanity.
So talk through the evolution of this movement here from the Vatican in 2016, the regional conferences, and then how the pillars of sport and faith at the service of humanity have evolved over the last 10 years.
Yeah, that's a good question. Coming out of the first conference at the Vatican, we asked everybody to sign a declaration of principles. And there were 6 principles that we found, or at least our theory was, these are 6 principles that are common to sport and faith. Pretty obvious stuff: joy, respect, compassion, enlightenment. So coming out of that conference, we spent a few years really sort of trying to explore, what do these principles mean you know, in practice, in real life. Beneath the six principles were always three pillars. We call them the three I's: inclusion, involvement. We're going to have to edit this part out. But the six principles were always built on a foundation of three pillars. And then we also have a slogan, live like you play. And the live like you play came from some comments that Pope Francis made. He said, and I'm not quoting, but essentially what he was saying is, challenge yourself in the game of life as you do in play. And so we spent, again, years and going to these conferences asking people, what does that mean to you? Live like you play. And we've gotten a spectrum of really interesting, fascinating answers to that. So there's this component of SSH that is theoretical, hypothetical, because these pillars and these principles and even our slogan mean something different to different people. But if we can provide a common language, and this is kind of where we've gotten to now, if our job is to facilitate dialogue between the sport and faith community, that's our stated mission, facilitate dialogue between the sport and faith communities and inspire partnerships amongst them. The dialogue typically ought to be around a common language. And so the pillars and principles behave as that common language. And if we can find people who want to collaborate around the notion of joy, fantastic. We find other people that want to collaborate around the pillar of inclusion, that's wonderful. We've done our job.
So you said sport means different things to different people. And the way that you're describing it certainly does. You also referenced Pope Francis a few times.
Yeah.
Well, there's a new pope.
Yeah.
And you also said, you know, bureaucracy is not necessarily a bad word. There's a lot of layers in the Vatican and everything you're sort of matriculating down. Yeah. I wonder, are there any sort of substantive changes from one pope to another? That you've seen, or maybe it's too early, maybe that you anticipate seeing over the next few years with Pope Leo?
I have no insider knowledge about any of this. I'm a lay foundation inspired by Catholic social teachings, but, you know, the Vatican would be the first to tell you that I am separate, legally unattached and free to behave, you know, free to conduct my business without, you know, their approval or guidance. But so as an American, and, you know, and I did get to meet Pope Francis a couple of times, what I've seen is very little change in substance, which is a good thing. I'm a big, big fan of both Pope Francis and now Pope Leo. Very little change in substance, but a big change in style. And what I mean by that is Pope Francis was very, I think, beloved for his willingness to sort of speak off the cuff. And I think Pope Leo is a lot more sort of a lot less likely to do that. And he's shown himself to be much more sort of rigid about sticking to the topic, sticking to maybe some prepared comments and prepared notes. And maybe that's a good thing, because I do feel like toward the end of Pope Francis's pontificate, there was a lot of chatter, you know, especially in the U.S. of what did he mean by this? What did he mean by that? And maybe we lost the plot a little bit. And I feel like Pope Leo has got everybody a little bit back focused on, this is what the gospel says, this is what I think, this is what I wish the world could be, would be. I think there's a little better focus.
It seems like part of what's underlying that question to you is, you know, an idea about, you know, how does this thing move from year to year, right? How does it change? How does it morph? And you know, who's in control of all of that without it being stated in that way, right? We understand you're the one that's running these things, and it's a part of a broader mission, mm-hmm. and it's in support of this broader mission and developing this relationship. And so I'm curious if you would maybe build on that to talk a little bit about what the plans are for the next couple of years. You've got an event coming up in November 2026 at Seton Hall University. Yeah. You also spoke this past summer in Baylor at the 4th Global Congress on Sport and Christianity related to some community-specific and city-specific initiatives that you're working on building out as well. So I'm curious if you'll share a little bit about those two things.
Yes, yeah, Seton Hall. Seton Hall is going to host a regional conference, an SSH conference, November 4, 5, 6. And by the way, anybody that's listening, please reach out to me. It is invite only, but we need to know if you want to attend, we need to know who you are so we can nominate you and get you on their invite list. But that'll be 3 days of really interesting content. One of their more famous alum is Bob Lee, who we all know from ESPN. I think he's retired now, but they're going to bring him out of retirement and he'll speak. His Eminence Cardinal Tobin from Newark is confirmed to attend at some point. We don't exactly know when. We'll get a chance to hear from him. And as I said earlier, the guests will be intentionally paired with each other or grouped together in terms of, you know, topics of interest so that we can start to accomplish certain things. And one example of that, we're starting an SSH association in higher ed, which is ostensibly a resource hub. As I talked about earlier, you know, most of the schools in the Big East, you know, are Catholic. And so there's sort of already common work and common missions through there. When I saw you guys at Baylor, there were hundreds of schools from all over North America that were all pursuing some sort of sport for good in collaboration with faith. All of that somehow has to be, you know, stapled together so that the conversation continues. You guys get together, I think, every 3 years. We get together more frequently than that, but not on a predictable schedule. And so in between these gatherings, you know, our notion is there ought to be a resource hub where the conversations can be ongoing. That resource hub is being built. It's going to be called the SSH Association for Higher Ed. And during the conference at Seton Hall in November, we'll have a breakout session for anybody in higher ed who's interested in learning more about that association. And I would call it sort of a soft launch. Our intent is to have the platform ready and some sort of strategy for content ready. And then we'll go sort of sign everybody up and let people begin to interact, you know, within that resource hub. The other thing you mentioned is the Milwaukee Sports Collective. Coming out of a conference at Marquette in 2023, we launched a digital platform in Milwaukee. And the notion there is, if the three of us were going to start a basketball league for underprivileged kids who otherwise cannot afford the pay-to-play model, the first thing, we're going to need a gymnasium. We might need a bus. And the faith community owns gymnasiums. The faith community owns buses. And so we've built a digital platform in Milwaukee. It's called the Milwaukee Sports Collective, where those connections can be made. So the three of us have a new basketball league, and we're looking for a gym. We would go on the platform and request a gym on the south side. And a Catholic high school principal might say, oh, I've got a gym. You can use it on Tuesdays and Thursdays. There's a Baptist church nearby that's got a bus. You know, that guy goes on the platform and says, I'll pick your kids up and bring them to the gym on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And so it's brilliant. It's magic. And by the way, it's working. It's doing exactly. Getting people to adopt the digital platform has been a little more difficult than we hoped, but the idea is clearly resonating. And people text us and call us all the time and say, I need a gym. Can you help me find a gym? Yeah, I can. You know, go on the platform. That, you know, that's where the rubber meets the road. I don't want to go on the platform. Can you just help me find a gym? Yes, we will do that. Eventually, we'll get everybody on the platform and it'll be efficient. Right now, we're making the connections and getting the work done, not with the efficiencies that a digital solution should bring.
Well, Philip, the efforts that you're putting into this project and all the related projects are very similar to what we're trying to do at Sport Faith Life. We're trying to bring people together. We're trying to continue the conversation. And we also think very deeply about where these things land, right? Who's being impacted by this? Who are the sort of target audiences? And we're grateful very much for the work that you've done to do this. And we're grateful for this interaction. You know, sometimes Catholic and Protestant worlds don't overlap enough, but Sport Faith Life has found ways to make that happen. And so have you. So we really appreciate those efforts. If someone wanted to get in touch with you, talk with you more, figure out more about the conferences, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Yeah. And before I give that, I wanted to just echo what you just said. Thank you for inviting me to your last conference. I thought it was fantastic. It was inspiring. It was helpful. It was powerful. And I really appreciate what you guys are doing. To look me up at sportforhumanity.com. That's our website, Sport for Humanity, spelled out. F-O-R, not the number four, Sport for Humanity. And send me a note. I'd love to talk with you.
Philip, thanks so much for being on Sport Faith Life and can't wait to talk to you again in the future.
Yeah, great to see you guys.